begin from quantum fluctuations. Then, if you will produce it in some kind of string-inspired cosmology or periodic universe, you have, first of all, to think where you did mistake, but not that you got great result. So this theorem is extremely simple. It's not a theorem, but why do we need inflation if you want to amplify this perturbation? Okay, let's draw the following graph. Here is the scale, here is the scale factor. And let's consider some initial moment of time when we specify the spectrum of perturbation. So this is the scale. So you go in this direction and amplitude is dropping for massless field linearly. Therefore, somewhere, and amplitude is proportional to L Planck, roughly speaking, divided by scale L. So somewhere here, okay, in the scales, which are just 10 minus 31 centimeters squared, you have the amplitude 10 minus 3, for instance, so big amplitude. In galactic scale, you have amplitude 10 minus 15. And what you want to do, you want to take fluctuation 58, yeah. But doesn't matter, it's not okay. 10 minus 50, 10 minus 58 is the same zero. So if you want to get 10 minus 5 amplitude of perturbation on galactic scale somewhere here, what you have to do? You have to take perturbation, which has big amplitude in Planckian scale, and stretch this perturbation to galactic scale. Now, you take perturbation here, after that, how it evolves? Its size, linear size, grows proportional to scale factor, so linear, like this one, right? And then you stretch this perturbation to galactic scale. First glance, no problem. Just take this perturbation, stretch to galactic scale. But the question is, what will be happening with amplitude of this perturbation when you are stretching it? Now, first let's consider, okay, scales which are smaller than the scale of Einstein elevator. There, in this scale, space-time like Minkowski space. Vacuum is preserved, right? Or it means, in the other words, that the amplitude when you are stretching perturbation is dropping linearly, inversely proportional to scale factor. And if, for instance, this perturbation would always remain or would have scale smaller than the curvature scale, what would be happening? It has large amplitude, and then when you are stretching it, amplitude is decreasing, and with which amplitude you are right here? 10 minus 58, yeah? If it would be always decreasing linear. Now, let's look what kind of situation do we have when there is no inflation. What is the expression for h minus 1? It's a divided by a dot. It's inverse decoupled constant. If there is no inflation, what happens with a dot? It's decreasing, right? Therefore, h minus 1 grows faster than scale factor. And the size of Einstein elevator without inflation goes like this one. So here you always remain inside Einstein elevator if you started in Einstein elevator. And perturbation which you try to stretch feels itself during this stretching like in Minkowski vacuum. Therefore, you begin with large amplitude right here with nothing. So you see, no inflation, no way to amplify perturbation in expanding universe. Okay, I want to stress it in expanding universe. Now, what happens when you have inflation? When you have inflation, a dot grows. Therefore, h minus 1 grows less slowly than the scale factor. And in the limit, when you have precise De Sitter universe, it's just constant. Therefore, when you have inflation, size of Einstein elevator is like this one, nearly constant. Then you begin somewhere here. Perturbation at the beginning drops amplitude. Until this moment of time, let's assume that the amplitude dropped by 2 orders of magnitude and became 10 minus 5 here on offset. Happens very fast. But after perturbation starts to exceed the curvature scale, what happens with it? It's frozen, right? So it keeps this amplitude 10 minus 5 until here, over huge range of the scales. And this is the way how we are getting perturbation necessary for galaxy formation from initial quantum fluctuation. You could ask me how in this case people got, for instance, some perturbation or life scale in pre-Big Bang, in so-called ekpyrotic universe, and God knows where. You see, I tell you, not in expanding universe. What they were doing, they were considering normally contracting universe. And in contracting universe, if it's not accelerated, or not accelerated or decelerated during contraction, everything happens in the opposite way. So in contracting universe, if there is no inflation or deflation, perturbations are leaving the curvature scale, because curvature scale there, for instance, in contracting Friedman universe, is proportional t, and scale factor is proportional t in power 2/3 minus, okay, t also minus, because we look at it negative time, and t goes to zero. So it's contracting universe, what I'm considering. But of course, the main problem there is how to transfer perturbations which you generated in contracting universe in the stage of the expansion. And during 15 years, nobody managed to say even something reasonable about it. Therefore, you shouldn't say that, for instance, there are competing mechanisms compared to inflation for explaining the observation. There are no these competing mechanisms. There are people who try to compete, yeah, but they fail. So, now, what happened after we had this inflation? So then, yes. Here scale, here is a scale factor. Here is the scale of perturbation. So you begin with perturbation here, then its scale is growing proportional to the scale factor. Then, h minus 1 is the size of Einstein elevator. Without inflation, it goes like this one. With inflation, it stays constant.
So it looks like there are many things
on the vertical axis, there are many things. It's simultaneously the scale of inhomogeneity and also the scale of Einstein elevator. So remove L if you don't want. So three things are shown on the same graph. You see, on the same graph, you could show the size of one quantity or one function and the other function also. One thing here is the scale of Einstein elevator and the other physical size of perturbation. So what we have after inflation? After inflation, then, if we have inflation, we have the following prediction, as I told. First of all, omega 0 should be equal 1. Today is the total energy density of all components. Second prediction which we have is the spectra of quantum fluctuations for the gravitational Newtonian potential, which can be written down, I guess without one half here, A multiplied by K in power ns minus 1. This approximation is valid only within limited range of K, which refers to the current observable scales. Generically, here stands logarithm. So this is approximation for logarithm, which astrophysicists use. And in the appropriate range, this logarithm which we are getting is fitted by this function with ns, which should be between 0.92 and 0.97. So there are always irritable deviation of spectral index from n equal 1, as I told you already, and the reason for that necessity of graceful exit from inflation. So here amplitude is not predicted. It's fixed to satisfy it's fixed to fit the current observational data. So, third thing which is predicted, the existence of gravity waves. And the amplitude of gravity waves, again, okay, let's write like this one. So it's traceless transverse part of the vertex, as I explained, squared divided by k cube is proportional to 1 plus p over epsilon, okay, for appropriate k at the moment when this perturbation crosses the curvature scale on inflation. And if you will make calculation here, for instance, then you would find that generically, in general models of inflation, gravitational waves should contribute something between 10 to 15% in the fluctuation of CMB in quadrupole component. It's for normalization. Now, fourth prediction, there should be random Gaussian fluctuations. Gaussian random fluctuations. So, fluctuations. You see, it's in the leading order. Of course, as you understand, Einstein equations are nonlinear. And therefore, there will be some kind of corrections there, which will be proportional to the square of the linear approximation. So they will be of the order of 10 minus 10. At this level, there will be generated non-Gaussianity, but not more. You see? Why these perturbations are Gaussian? Because what you do? You take harmonic oscillator in ground state, and then with the help of external force, classical force, you excite it. So if you have Gaussian wave packet, then this Gaussian wave packet will remain there. Why I mentioned about Gaussianity? Because it's one of the important issues for observationalists. Because right now people are getting so many points, so much statistics, that they will be able to verify Gaussianity at the level of 10 minus 9. But perhaps to the level of 10 minus 8, better to say, yeah? At the level of 10 minus 10, for amplitude of perturbation 10 minus 5, they perhaps will not get it there. To see these corrections which are due to the quadratic corrections in Einstein equations. But of course, there are some models which could produce you strong non-Gaussianity, but I think, okay, as I told, if there is no reason to complicate something, why you have to do it? Now, there is one more interesting thing, which I don't want to discuss. It probably would be proper to discuss rather than the conference about 50 years to the average interpretation. What is this thing? How quantum fluctuations are becoming classical? Take, for instance, initial vacuum state. This initial vacuum state is translationally invariant, right? Then, as a result of unitary quantum evolution, translational invariance of this state is not broken. So you cannot distinguish one point from the other. But nevertheless, when you look on the sky, that you see that Andromeda, for instance, is in one certain position, not one megaparsec away, etc., etc., etc. So you could ask how these kind of things happened. Of course, Bohr's explanation would be extremely simple and clear. He would say that when first astronomer looked at the sky, he collapsed the whole function of the whole universe. So it sounds a little bit absurd, of course, yeah? But if you would calculate the wave function for the state which is produced from initial quantum fluctuations, then you will really find that this state can be represented as a state of many classically different universes. So in one branch, Andromeda is there, in the other branch, in one megaparsec away. Yeah? In the third place, one megaparsec away. When you will take every of these branches in the grand superposition, would sum up all these things, and you will still get translation invariance state, but this translation invariance is broken in every component in this superposition. So as a result of evolution or quantum fluctuation, what you get the state which is like Schrödinger cat, but now instead of Schrödinger cat, which is dead and alive, you have just many universes. And it's clear why it happens, because you take this kind of quantum uncertainty and amplify it tremendously in the universe. And of course, who cares? For observation, it doesn't matter, because in observations we measure all these statistics. But if you want to think what reality is like quantum mechanics, then of course, okay, if you're not crazy, you will not use this blah, blah, blah by word. And we need to think what does it mean when you have interpretation, because in this case, you are starting with something and you are getting a lot of classically different words. Not words, but words. Then you have actually to think these different words are only different words or they are realistic. First, they decay here, but nevertheless, if the difference between them would be not so strong, they would interfere. If something can influence you, then it means that even as a result of interference, it would mean that it's also as real as we are real. Okay, but this is, you can think about it till the end of the lecture. And now let me go from this kind of fantastic things. So, they are not fantastic, but it's the most amazing thing, because you see when string guys give talk about 26, 11 dimensions, etc., then everybody listens. Nobody complains. When you start to speak about many world interpretation of quantum mechanics, everybody becomes excited and feels personally insulted. You see? So I tried actually to understand this phenomenon for a very long time, because as you understand, interpretation of quantum mechanics is not only a branch of physics, it's also a branch of psychology. You see, and perhaps it would be interesting thing for psychiatrists to test some people. But you know that perhaps the difference between these two things is the fact quantum mechanics is taken by everybody seriously. But 26, 11 dimensions, okay, nobody perhaps takes seriously enough. And therefore people don't care, don't become so excited. But okay, now let me go to so-called more boring things. So now what I will try to do, I will try to explain you what will happen with the initial spectrum of perturbation after we will evolve it, after inflation. So, how inflation is normally finished? If I will take only one of the models for demonstration, because it doesn't matter which model I will take, what we have at the end of the inflation, for instance, in the theory, where inflation happens, is a potential m squared phi squared, scalar field oscillates. So what does it mean oscillating scalar field, classical scalar field? It's a lot of classical particles with zero momenta, yeah, which you put in condensate, both the Einstein condensate. So you have a lot of massive particles. At inflation, you know, scalar field is not changing, so you shouldn't think about this thing as about particles. Then nothing happens. But after they started to oscillate, you could think about them as a particles. Massive particles. If these massive particles coupled with other fields, what happens with them? Of course, they have finite lifetime, and they decay. And they decay and can produce a lot of other particles. So from inflaton field, finally we can go to the other particle, and finally we can get gamma photons, we can get quarks, we can get some kind of unknown particle, whatever you want. So how to go from here to here is still not completely clear, but the discouraging thing here doesn't matter how to go, because the main thing is here to come to these photons and the other remnant of the matter. And how you went there, you will never be able perhaps to check, because there are no traces of this transition. But here could happen interesting physics. And what kind of interesting physics could happen? One thing people call preheating and reheating, and speak about the role of parametric resonance. So what is this parametric resonance in physical language? You understand that when phi particle, for instance, decay in the other high particle, which is also a constant, then the other particle decay in the same particle. Yeah? This state can be occupied already. Because all these particles originally have zero moment. And when they decay, they produce particles with momenta n divided by 2, where n is mass, ну, minus mass, negligible mass of final particles. If the final state of particle high is already occupied, then what happens with probability for the next particle to decay? It's amplified by Bose-Einstein factor. And it leads to exponential speeding of the process of decay of this particle. And this is called effect of parametric resonance. You see, this parametric resonance could happen in two regimes, for small coupling constant and for large coupling constant. In case when you could consider decay one by one for small coupling constant, it corresponds to so-called narrow parametric resonance, where the thing could be calculated. No, they can be calculated in both cases, actually, analytically. In the case when coupling constant, which is responsible for this production, is large enough, and for instance, you have to take into account the fact that three particles simultaneously, okay, could decay in something, and these occupation numbers at the end are large, that is called so-called broad parametric resonance. And without solving material equation, just consider this amplification factor and solving simple equation for harmonic oscillator, you can derive all of the results. So, why people wrote at least 500 papers on this subject, I do not know, ask these people, because everything already was in the first paper, which was written by Linda Staravinsky and Kaufman. In fact, actually, I didn't find anything else in these other papers. Okay, good. So, but here, what we have to do, we have to produce, finally, the current quantum of the universe. Then, universe is expanding, and, of course, at a certain stage, late enough, the only component which becomes relevant for us is photon, baryon, electron, as you understand, then cold dark matter particle, and perhaps cosmological constant, or if you want, call it quintessence. Therefore, let's just think about these particles. Why these particles are important? It's clear that photon would deliver information to us today about early universe and about inhomogeneities in the early universe. Baryon influence the distribution of photons because at the early moment of time, baryons and electrons, protons, okay, let me write proton here, and neutron also, by the way, they interact with nuclear forces, this thing electromagnetically, and gamma with epsilon also electromagnetically, therefore, till certain moment of time, these components are coupled with each other. And we have here a baryon radiation plasma. And of course, the amount of baryons influence speed of sound in this plasma, and speed of sound determines us the location of first Doppler peak, for instance. And the others. Why this thing is important? Because cold dark matter particle, finally, after equality moment, equality is where energy density of ultra-intrinsic component is equal moment, when energy density of ultra-intrinsic component, like radiation, is equal to the energy density of dust, or cold matter. So after this moment of time, gravitational potential is entirely determined by cold dark matter particles and baryons. This is why it's important. Why cosmological constant is important? Of course, in the early universe, it's absolutely unimportant. But close to us, it determines the expansion. And cosmological constant enters, for instance, this relation, which relate linear scales with the angular scale. As I told you already, here, for instance, to measure the curvature of the universe, we need, or we have one standard ruler. And this standard ruler is the size of the horizon at the moment of recombination, linear size. How this linear size is related with the angular size under which we observe it today depends on lambda also, because lambda determines the geometry of the universe close to us. Now, There is, so these are the most relevant things. Of course, there are less relevant components, but they are still relevant up to such extent, up to a big extent. Namely, neutrino, for instance. Why neutrino is relevant? Because they also change a little bit the energy density of ultra-relativistic component. And if you don't know here, for instance, too much about the number of neutrinos, and there appears some kind of uncertainty. But I would assume that we have only three kind of neutrino and would not actually, how to call, take it as a free parameter. There is other thing like gravitational waves. There could be primordial gravitational waves also, which could influence the rate of the expansion. From nuclear synthesis, we know that the amount of this primordial gravitational wave could not exceed, for instance, 10%. Therefore, let me forget about this parameter also. And let me also, for my consideration, okay, take case where omega total in the universe today, which is epsilon gamma over epsilon critical plus epsilon baryon over epsilon critical plus, etc., etc., is equal to 1. I will show you, we'll explain in words what happens when omega total is not equal to 1 and how the result of observation will be influenced. But for most of my analytics, I will be focused on this model and will try to find how the features of the CMB spectra, all dark matter, over epsilon critical plus epsilon lambda over epsilon critical should equal 1, yeah, or something. So we try in this case to explain you mostly how the features of CMB spectra depend on these two parameters. You see, so on the energy density of baryons and on the energy density of cold dark matter, and from there we will conclude something, okay, very, very precise about the values of these quantities. Now, let me go to the evolution of perturbations. In fact, we have started to consider already the evolution of perturbations in the hydrodynamical media, right? Not last time, even one lecture before. And we have considered one component fluids there. So we were assuming that effectively, what, how can we describe the universe? There is energy density in the universe, and epsilon, and which has this equation of state. And then we derived all of the solutions. Now, but in reality, as you understand, there can be more than one component, and there is more than one component in the universe. If, of course, cold dark matter, baryons and radiation would be coupled and could move only together, then one component would be good approximation. And here, okay, all the composition would be respected on also reflected in the equation of state, how pressure depends on energy density. But when two components, like cold dark matter, and for instance baryon and radiation, can move with respect to each other, my consideration, which I did before, fails. And therefore, the task becomes much more complicated than it was before. Nevertheless, if I consider, for instance, the scales of perturbation, which are much larger than h minus 1, yeah? H minus 1 is cosmological time after inflation, then what would you expect will happen with this perturbation? You understand that for perturbation with these so large scales, the fact that matter can consist of different components is completely irrelevant. Why? Because of causality, this component cannot shift with respect to each other on the significant distance. Therefore, for such perturbation, you can still apply one fluid approximation. And in one fluid approximation, what we found, what happens on the scales with amplitude of perturbation, when we consider perturbation is a scale much larger than the horizon scale. Nothing happens. Yeah? They are just frozen, they are dead, or they are still not born for the active life. So here, you have frozen perturbation. Frozen perturbation. Something happens with gravitational potential and equation of state is changing here. When it happens one, gravitational potential okay, changes by the factor 9 over 10, something like this one, as I showed you, when we go from radiation-dominated epoch to the matter-dominated epoch. But what happens with perturbation, when perturbation enters horizon scale, you could ask me. So when perturbation, okay, becomes like this one. Here, what you would expect, here you would expect, for instance, if there is pressure, you would expect that the sound wave would appear. Moreover, here, cold dark matter component, which is not coupled in any other way besides gravitationally with radiation and baryons, can start to move with respect to baryon radiation plasma. And here, the evolution can become very messy. Because you understand what happens there. There is one component, which is dust. Dust, okay, grows in the amplitude, yeah, in homogeneous in the dust. But in this homogeneous, you have propagating waves in the baryon radiation plasma, because baryons and radiation are coupled, tightly coupled with each other, and they can be together described as ideal fluid. So it's two fluid dynamics, and actually from here, mass or mass in formulas come. But nevertheless, it can be resolved.
Start.
Yeah?
Let's say we have particles at very, very long wavelength, like one particle or two. So there wouldn't be internal equilibrium?
No. Internal equilibrium, they were produced before, as you understand. The thermal equilibrium is the notion which refers to the local scales. If there would be one particle on horizon, then of course there will be no processes which would bring particle. Of course, they would not. They would be in an equilibrium state at the beginning, then they will remain in an equilibrium state.
And wouldn't there be any way to detect them as particles?
You mean what do you mean to detect? When you see one particle, then you see one particle. What?
Yeah, but would I see a particle that it's originally of a wavelength of a...
No. This actually, wavelength for the particle, wavelength, that's the way to watch this. Because for particle at rest, wavelength, okay, is infinite. K is equal to zero, as you understand. But here we are speaking not about particle, we are speaking here about collective things, actually, about gravitational potential. Here, in fact, what we have to determine when we begin with the initial spectra, yeah, like this one, then we evolve it, then we bring this thing to radiation, or to recombination epoch. At recombination epoch, photons decouple from electrons and baryons and start to propagate free, right? And, of course, at this moment of decoupling, they are distributed, this photon is distributed, first of all, in homogeneously. Second thing, there is gravitational potential, which also determines deviation of the universe from homogeneity. And therefore, photons which are arriving from different directions have different temperature. And our task will be to determine how temperature will vary from place to place, depending on the angle at which we observe this fluctuation. And what we need for that, from these kind of things, we need to evolve, first of all, energy density of radiation, which will be like this one, delta epsilon eta gamma, eta recombination, so gamma. We need to find what will be in homogeneity in the distribution of the energy density of radiation at the moment of recombination. We need to know this thing in different scales. And also what we need to determine gravitational potential at the moment of recombination, beginning from these initial conditions. Correct? And then when we will determine these two things, then, from these two things, we will derive delta T over T, how we observe them on today's sky. Therefore, plan is very simple. You begin with this thing, evolves them, arrive to these two things, and then evolve them for the free photons, and then see how this delta epsilon gamma and phi are printed out on the today's study. Yeah? So, these are the quantities which we will need to find, or better to say here, okay, I need to consider delta epsilon over epsilon gamma, fractional fluctuations, which will I will denote by delta at the moment at the recombination. So I have to determine this quantity and this quantity as a functions of f chi k cube after inflation, yeah, in various scales. So this is input, this is for a moment for me output. And for that I have to start here and have to develop the theory of perturbation now in the universe where we have baryon radiation plasma plus cold dark matter. So, and I have to consider gravitational stability there to determine this point. So let's do this thing. Instability in a couple of baryon radiation plasma and cold dark matter component after inflation. This is the topic. So these are cold dark matter particles, for instance, okay? And these are baryons. Let's take like this one. What is the other color? For photons, I need red, perhaps. So, and there are photons, okay? So, now, you see these particles, cold dark matter particles, they normally are not coupled with the baryon radiation plasma. But radio radiation plasma is sub-seq. UD, or how it's called, UD5, before decoupling. Here you could have gravitational instability in these particles when they started to move, or when they started to dominate. And moreover, in homogeneities, in these cold dark matter particles, even before recombination, but after they started to dominate, would grow like in dust-dominated matter. So it means that gravitational potential stays constant and delta epsilon over epsilon for cold dark matter particles for the scale smaller than the horizon would grow proportional to the scale factor, right? When this thing will be happening, in homogeneities, in baryon radiation plasma will not grow simultaneously if they are still coupled, right? Why? Because pressure from the photons is rather large. It means that the speed of sound here close to speed of light for the photons. And it means that the genes scale is comparable with the scale of the horizon. Therefore, this particle could already infer gravitational instability, but nevertheless, baryon radiation plasma can behave at the same time. Something like a sound wave, which is propagating in the external gravitational field which is created by this cold particle. This is the physical picture for the scale smaller than the horizon scale. But on the scale larger than the horizon scale, of course, nothing is moving here because the scale of change of the time which you need to change perturbation is a scale larger than the horizon, larger than the cosmological time. Therefore, as I told you already, after inflation on the scale larger than the horizon, we can easily express all the quantities which we need through the quantities or through the spectrum which was generated after inflation. So, considering physical wavelengths larger than h minus 1, we know that nothing happens with perturbations and everything is transferred to from after inflation to recombination, yeah, without any change. Why? Because this is, okay, cosmological time. So, what is delta gamma in this case? How it could be expressed in terms of the
Can you explain a little more how you translate the spectrum of perturbations generated after inflation into spectrum of these physical things like baryons, photons? Because
yeah.
that was inflaton field.
No. Inflaton field decays. Then, okay, matter composition changes. During this kind of change of matter composition, nothing happens within homogeneities. You see? Why? Because of causality. There is a very simple reason. If you have, for instance, some inflaton particles like this one, yeah, which were distributed like this one, then every inflaton particle assume decay into baryon plus photon. You see, nothing will happen with the inhomogeneity of the energy density. Only matter or composition of this matter, where you have this inhomogeneity of the energy density, will change. But profile and delta epsilon over epsilon will not be changing. Gravitational potential also will not change. So reheating, preheating doesn't influence all these things. What do you mean, all fields? After inflation, you have only one field. It's inflaton field. These inflaton particles are distributed inhomogeneously. Every inflaton particle produces a lot of other particles. But all these processes are local. The inhomogeneities in the distribution of inflaton particles and these particles, which will be produced, remain the same. So gravitational potential will not be changed as a result of this decay. You see? Because all these things happens in some place which has scales much, much smaller than the scale of inhomogeneity. No, after that, you produce particles, you have multi-component media, okay, with radiation, etc., where, for instance, all this energy distribution is inhomogeneous. Yeah, and gravitational potential is the same as was produced after inflation. And then what you do, you take this multi-component media and look how the spectrum of inhomogeneities is evolved there and how it will change. And as I told you already, on the scale, which remains still larger than the horizon scale, nothing happens. And in this case, for instance, delta gamma can be written down as delta epsilon gamma over epsilon gamma is equal minus 2 pi initial perturbation spectra, yeah? So it's depending on the wave number. Why? Because nothing happened, as I said. Maximum what happened here, that this gravitational potential compared to original gravitational potential in all scales, for instance, was reduced by a factor 9/10 at the moment of the change of equation of state. But you understand, here gravitational potential, of course, is due to the radiation gamma before T equality, because radiation before equality dominates over the matter. But after equality, gravitational potential remains the same, changed by factor 10^9, but remains the same, and this gravitational potential is due to the cold dark matter particles, mostly. You see? But the main thing that this spectra, okay, this spectra is not changed. So spectra of the gravitational potential in the scale larger than the horizon scale is just frozen and nothing happens with it. And I know that recombination is normally, in all standard model, after equality. Therefore, at the moment of recombination, I could write also the inhomogeneity of the cold dark matter particles. So wait a minute. It's constant. Ah, yeah, okay, good. I will write. It's delta epsilon cold matter over epsilon cold matter, and then there was a relation minus 2 phi, and this thing was minus 2/9 of phi initial. Okay. Yeah, so this refers to recombination. T larger than T equality. And this is, sorry, this is before T equality. Okay, good. So, look, I will repeat once more because I lost myself the line. So I will try to find. So what happens? You have this initial spectral perturbation, which is given here. There, on the scale larger than the horizon, as I told, nothing happens. And before equality, this gravitational potential is mostly due to the radiation. Yeah? And radiation is related with the gravitational potential before equality by this relation, which I derived 2 lectures ago. So delta epsilon gamma over epsilon gamma is just minus 2 gravitational potential. Then the moment of equality happens. After equality, the main contribution to the energy density comes from cold dark matter particles. I will neglect contribution of baryons. In this case, who takes care about gravitational potential? About gravitational potential in this case is takes care cold dark matter. Yeah? And, of course, the same relation on superhorizon scales is valid. And as we also discovered, what happened with this potential, which now we have in the universe, which is dominated by cold particles, it just dropped by factor 2 over 10 compared to the initial potential. Therefore, you know what is the gravitational potential, one quantity you know at the moment of recombination, which determines the amplitude fluctuation. And you could ask the question, what is delta gamma over gamma? At recombination, but after equality. This thing goes only before equality. But after equality, what will happen? After equality, okay, at the moment T recombination, I will write formula and then we'll explain how it appears. It's equal minus 4 over 3 delta M. Yeah? And it's equal 4 over 3 minus 2 phi at the moment of recombination. Because it's this relation is valid. Over it's minus 8 over 3 phi k at t recombination. So from where I got this relation? You see? I got it from the fact that perturbations are adiabatic. What does it mean, perturbations are adiabatic? So here it follows from adiabaticity perturbation. But adiabatic. Adiabatic perturbation means that the number of photons per the number density of cold dark matter particles remains the same everywhere in the space. You see, precisely the same. Delta, photons are distributed inhomogeneously. This thing distributed inhomogeneously, but the ratio remains homogeneous. So you have precisely the same number of photons per every cold dark matter particle. It means adiabatic. No entropy component. Such perturbations are produced as a result of the decay of inflaton field. Now, this adiabaticity is preserved on the scale larger than the horizon scale. Why? Because photons, if they could even move, yeah, with respect to these cold particles, have just not enough time to move over the scale of perturbation because of causality. You see, it's a physical explanation. Therefore, on the scale larger than the horizon scale, this condition will be satisfied. And how could we write that this thing is constant? How could we rewrite this thing, that this thing is constant? What is the number of photons in terms of temperature? It's T cube, right? And energy density of photons is temperature in power force, right? Therefore, you could write N gamma, that N gamma is proportional epsilon gamma in power 3/4. And what is epsilon cold dark matter particles? It's just proportional to the number of cold particles because all of them have the same mass. So here you have epsilon m. And this thing should be constant. If you now vary this thing, or differentiate whatever you want, then you would get from here that 3/4 delta epsilon gamma to epsilon gamma is equal delta epsilon m to epsilon m. Yeah? So therefore, after recombination, if the scale larger than the curvature scale or larger than the horizon scale, I can always express the inhomogeneities is the distribution of the radiation in terms of inhomogeneities of the cold matter, and the cold matter, cold dark matter particle inhomogeneities could be expressed in terms of the gravitational potential at the moment of recombination, and gravitational potential at the moment of recombination is expressed in terms of the original gravitational potential. So this is the line. You start here, you come here, it's a factor 9 over 10, nothing happened, and then you go back. Then you know two quantities, yeah? And from these two quantities are enough to calculate, as we will see, delta t over t. All this refers to the perturbations which have the scale larger than the horizon scale at the moment of recombination. Yes, sir.
So could you comment on how this story changes if axions would be the cold dark matter
particle? No any difference if axions will also produce inhomogeneously, but no, axions actually no. I tell you how this story is changing. Because usually axions acquire masses actually much later. And in the case of axions, you could produce so-called entropy perturbation. You see? How the story would change? You know, for instance, for the case when you got all the particles, as a result of the decay of inflaton, you have cold dark matter particle and you have appropriate number of photons, two photons per every particle, yeah? So the distribution of energy density of radiation and cold dark matter here is correlated. They are related like this. But what could happen? You could have inhomogeneous distribution of radiation, for instance, and produce homogeneous distribution of some other particle, but much later, like this one. Then you understand that the number of photons per every particle would be different in different places. And it means that this thing would not be constant for axion, and when this thing is not constant, this perturbation people call entropy perturbation. You see, where you have variation of the type of photons per one particle. So, but this thing is not produced after inflation. You see? It could be produced much later, or it could be produced, could be made, for instance, in multi-field inflationary models, and so on, but in normal inflation, everything what comes out is only adiabatic. So you understand that on the scale larger than the curvature scale at the moment of recombination, everything is very simple. Original spectra, which was produced after inflation, just retranslated to this moment of time practically without change. And of course, you could say that in this case, observing fluctuations in big angular scales, because big angular scales correspond to large physical scales, as you understand, perhaps we could see just directly primordial spectrum of perturbation, okay, which was produced after inflation, because the spectrum was not changed. And in fact, we can see. But because, of course, Mercurian's accuracy is not good. Yeah?
Can you explain again this factor of 9/10?
9/10, I explained, I derived it in two lectures before. So there is no simple, okay, not simple. Not to your explanation, there is no physical meaning in this thing, you see, too much. It appears at the moment where effective equation of state changes from p equal epsilon over 3 to p equals 0. You see? It's just general drop. But there is no physical meaning, therefore, if you want, take this factor as 1. You see? Good. I could introduce the quantity and would get this factor different. But okay, doesn't matter. Now, let's consider scales which are smaller than the scale of curvature at the moment of recombination. Yeah? Lambda, which is smaller than h minus 1 at the moment of recombination. So this is h minus 1 at the moment of recombination. We are considering now scales which are like this one. So what happens with this scale? Here already perturbation have chance to evolve. And to determine gravitational potential and delta gamma, we have to consider gravitational instability, yeah, really instability, in two-component media. So what are two-component media? It's baryon radiation plasma before recombination. Okay, everything is ionized and they are tightly coupled, plus cold dark matter particles. And cold dark matter particles, we assume they have non-baryonic origin, therefore they do not interact. Yeah. What do you mean continuum of radiation?
If you have the sound, part of the sound waves, the continuum of the sound waves as it enters.
No, it's not sound wave, it's something very heavy, you see? Like this one, yeah? Which is moving with respect to baryon radiation plasma. It has no baryonic origin. We do not know what kind of particles are they. Perhaps they have. Perhaps they are particles. Nobody knows it, but it's clear that it's something what is not baryon and what is not radiation. And what could it be else? Yeah? And not cosmological constant also. So if I will exclude these three possibilities, I don't have too much choice. I have to call it particle. You see? And or something what is gravity. Now, here, cold dark matter, I have to assume that it's non-baryonic, and therefore it interacts with baryon radiation plasma only gravitationally. You see, but you have two media. It's one media, and it's second media. Therefore, you cannot just write Einstein equation and get everything from there. You see? You have to use something else. When you have, for instance, 10 media, so 300 media, okay? Different media. Imagine that 10 components of Einstein equations are not enough to determine 300 quantities, correct? But what we do instead, if we have 300 quantities, we write conservation law for these quantities, yeah, independently. And if they interact only gravitationally, then this covariant conservation law for these two media should be valid independently. Therefore, what we will do, we will write to determine the gravitational instability or the evolution of this media on the scale smaller than the horizon scale, we simply write conservation laws like this one for baryon radiation plasma plus for cold dark matter. And plus, to determine gravitational potential in addition, we will take 0-0 Einstein equation, or Poisson equation, if you want. And then we will get complete system of equation. Clear? Clear. Now, what is the energy momentum tensor for cold dark matter particles? So cold dark matter is dust, usually. Energy momentum tensor is extremely simple. It's epsilon d u alpha u beta. Pressure is equal to zero here. So, and about cold dark matter, we know practically all about dust, we know practically everything. You see here, there is no pressure, nothing, so on the scale larger than the horizon scale, this dust, when it dominates, is frozen. When it doesn't dominate, also is frozen. On the scale smaller than the horizon scale, when this dust is dominating, it's just the first normal gravitational instability, which is simple also, as I told, gravitational potential constant, delta epsilon vessel grows proportional to scale factor. Now, baryonic radiation, what is this? It's already not so simple guy. So, energy momentum tensor in this case is also, you could write first part at least very simple. So it's energy density of radiation plus energy density of baryons plus pressure And what is pressure? Pressure is 1/3 of energy density of radiation, because pressure of the barriers can be neglected in this case. So total pressure would be written down like this one. Multiplied by four velocities. Here it's the same four velocities, because photons and barriers before decoupling move together. Right? Right. Minus pressure, and this pressure is 1/3 again, epsilon gamma delta alpha beta is minus p delta alpha beta. Plus, we have to write something else here. Why? Because if free mean free path for the propagation of the photons would be equal to zero, everything would be very tight. And it would be ideal gas. But you understand that photons are coupled with this problem, but nevertheless they have non-zero mean free path. Yeah, so they travel like drunk sailors. And what is the result of this traveling of photons? Is the appearance of viscosity, of course. Because, for instance, if you would take very small scales and some photon, in spite of the fact that it's dropped, yeah, will go like this one from one place to the other, then it will completely mix up all the information in the scales on which it will go. And you will have actually incredibly big dissipations there. Therefore, here you have, if you want to take into account this kind of dissipation, here you have to add viscosity term. Why I write viscosity terms? Yeah, because I'm a good guy. If I would write these viscosity terms in the energy momentum tensor, they look usually horrible. But the only role of this viscosity term is the earlier equation to introduce these terms, okay, which people discovered experimentally at the beginning, perhaps, and after they developed kinetic theory for it. I don't know how it was historically. So the only thing which will come from here, I will show you in the equations below. So what are these equations? If I will consider an arbitrary fluid now, with viscosity and with everything, okay, or both of the things together, and would write these conservation equations generically for perturbations, what it would be? It would be, of course, Euler equation, but relativistic generalization of Euler equations. Yeah? And they would look like forward. So, first equation, generic case, where I have non-ideal hydrodynamical fluid with an arbitrary equation of state and take into account shear viscosity. Doesn't matter what is shear viscosity, you will see that there will appear one term in this equation. Then, zero, T zero alpha alpha equation. What is this in normal hydrodynamics, by the way, if you know hydrodynamics? Is the conservation law for the mass in normal hydrodynamics? In Friedman cosmology, it's d epsilon is equal minus 3h epsilon plus p, also conservation law. First law, first, how it's called, dE is equal minus p dV. It's first law of thermodynamics, yeah? Something like this. So, of course, zero, zero equation here. Einstein equation, not Einstein equation, I mean zero order equation. For homogeneous thing would give me this equation minus 3h epsilon plus p d log a. But right now I'm not interested in homogeneous part, it's more or less trivial. We solve it, let me write first order terms in homogeneous. And then you have here delta epsilon prime plus 3h epsilon plus delta p minus 3 epsilon plus p phi prime. Phi is gravitational potential. Should I recall metric or you still remember it for perturbations? Metric was ds squared is equal a squared eta 1 plus 2 phi d eta squared minus 1 minus 2 pi. And here delta ik, etc. Trivial part. So it's gravitational potential, you remember. Prime means derivative with respect to conformal time matter here. And h is equal a prime over a scale factor. And plus, here there is term a epsilon plus p u e e. So it's normal divergence of the three velocity. Yeah? This equation is separately valid for dust, and it's separately valid for barrel radiation plasma. You could just substitute the appropriate equation of state. Then, second equation, which I will use, is T alpha alpha alpha. Okay, would be logical to use this equation, of course, yeah? Is equal to zero. Then it would give me three earlier equations for the velocities. But because I can see the adiabatic perturbation, why do I need all these three equations? Too much, yeah? Therefore, let me take divergence of these three earlier equations. Okay, so differentiated or special coordinated take trace. Then what I will get for the perturbation? For the perturbation, I will get the following nice equation. A5 epsilon plus P U E E prime, then minus 4 over 3. And let me write this kind of symbol. It like this one. It will be so-called shear viscosity. And this term how comes here is Laplacian U, E, E. So you see there is third derivative of the velocity here. Special derivative. And it's clear why. Because it's viscosity and this thing is related with the propagation of the photons. Of course, for dust, this viscosity is equal to zero, therefore you can forget this term. But first term for dust, P is equal to zero, you could leave, yeah? Then plus Laplace delta P plus epsilon plus P Laplace of the gravitational potential. So you recognize the divergence of earlier equation for the velocity. Right? Now, for cold dark matter, everything is extremely simple. Here, for cold dark matter, you just substitute P is equal to zero, shear viscosity is equal to zero, and do it as exercise. But cold dark matter particles, in these particles, we will be interested mostly after they will start to be dominant. And then they behave like completely independent guy, yeah? Because all other things do not disturb too much the gravitational instability. What is more important for me, what I want to extract right now, is the behavior of inhomogeneities in radiation. You see, because what I will need to determine the amplitude of these inhomogeneities in the distribution of the radiation at the moment of equality, not equality, but the moment of recombination. So, therefore, let me consider these two equations for baryon in the case of baryon radiation plasma. I will make break in 10 minutes, so don't worry, I didn't forget about it. Yeah? I just want to bring things to some logical end. So, first of all, so baryon radiation plasma. Radiation plasma. First of all, let's calculate the speed of sound in baryon radiation plasma. Yeah? Do you know how to do it? You have to make variation of energy density of baryons plus radiation, yeah? And adiabatic variation, because when you make perturbation in homogeneous baryon radiation plasma, because photons are tightly coupled with baryons, they are disturbed together, and the number of photons to one baryon remains the same. And then look how delta P looks in terms of this perturbation of energy density. And the coefficient of proportionality is called speed of sound square. Yeah? Or you could say that it's dp over d epsilon under constant entropy. And constant entropy means precisely adiabaticity condition. Why? Because the number of photons is the same thing as entropy. You know, the entropy of radiation is t cubed, number of photons is also t cubed. And number of photons per one baryon is entropy per one baryon. So now let's calculate this. What is delta epsilon, delta p? If you defer this, it's nothing more than just 1/3 of delta epsilon gamma, because baryons, okay, do not contribute too much in pressure. So, but it's not yet the end of the job, right? Right. Because here should stand plus delta epsilon baryon. And epsilon baryon could be significant compared to the epsilon of the photons, right? So, and now you know that delta epsilon baryon to epsilon baryon is equal 3/4 of delta epsilon gamma over epsilon gamma. This is condition of adiabaticity. This is condition that the number of photons per one baryon is the same everywhere. I derive it for cold particles 1 minute ago, therefore I'm not going to rederive this. Now you use this expression, and you could rewrite this delta epsilon gamma in the following form. It will be 1/3, 1 + 3/4, epsilon b over epsilon gamma, minus 1, delta epsilon gamma plus delta epsilon b. You see? Simple thing I wrote in complicated way using this relation. Why? Because I know that this is the total energy density, and this means that this thing is nothing more than just the speed of sound squared. So you see that speed of sound squared is just 1/3, 1 + 3/4, epsilon baryon over epsilon gamma minus 1. When there are practically no baryon, this term dissipates, and speed of sound is 1/√3, as it should be for ultralinguistic fluid. When you have a lot of baryons, then the sound becomes heavy, and you know that heavy guy normally moves more slowly than lighter guys. So you have here heavy sound with the speed which goes down, speed of propagation which goes down. Now, let me just use this definition. Okay, I am not going to do this job for you. Yeah, you can do it yourself. Express this UII here, yeah, through phi prime, delta epsilon, etc. Baryon radiation plasma, substituted here. And then write everything in terms of delta epsilon gamma over epsilon gamma. Yeah? This equation. You could do it. So let me write final form of the equation for delta epsilon gamma over epsilon gamma, which I am getting from these two equations after I exclude the divergence of the velocity and I use definition of the speed of sound. So it's arithmetics. There is nothing too deep there, but equation which you will get will look interesting for sound. So it will be delta prime. Prime means derivative with respect to conformal type over CS squared prime minus 3 Z, okay, this viscosity term like this one over epsilon gamma A Laplace delta prime gamma minus Laplace delta gamma is equal 4/3 C S squared Laplace phi plus 4 phi prime over C S squared prime minus 12 viscosity over epsilon gamma A Laplace phi prime. So you see, very simple equation. But, it's of course joke, right? Because normally, of course, this gravitational potential is determined by the contribution of all dark particles, baryons, radiation, etc., etc. And if you would write here, in addition, Poisson equation, analog of Poisson equation, general relativity, plus consider one more component, like cold dark matter, then of course you will get three equations, which is just horrible. You can solve it all your computer. But when you know that the things actually look like they could be solved over your computer, you have to think a little bit and try to use your advantage that you are smarter than computer. Yeah? Namely, what we have to do in this case. We are, in fact, interested in delta gamma evolution, yeah, or amplitude, at t larger than t equality. So what we want to calculate this quantity at the moment of recombination, which is larger than the t equality. So if we will consider, you know that on large scale, before t equality, after t equality, gravitational potential stays constant before it enters the horizon scale. Most of the perturbations, okay, in which we are interested and which lead to this Doppler peak, entered horizon precisely between time t equality and t recombination. So, and before they entered horizon, they were frozen. After they entered horizon, they started to evolve. But after perturbation entered horizon, you see, and dust started to dominate. What happens with gravitational potential if dust is dominating? I told that dust is extremely simple when it dominates. Either on the scale larger than the horizon, delta epsilon over epsilon plus phi stays constant, both, or on the scale smaller than the horizon, inhomogeneity in the distribution of dust grow, but gravitational potential stays constant still on all scale. Yeah? Therefore, if dust gives the main contribution to the gravitational potential, phi is constant. And if phi is constant, you could forget about these two terms. Correct? And survive with these terms. Moreover, this term is due to the dust and stays constant. Therefore, what is this? It's just source in the second order differential equation for delta gamma. Correct? And you get second order differential equation, which is inhomogeneous. So how to find its general solution? It's a particular solution of this equation plus general solution of homogeneous equation. First of all, who will tell me one particular solution of this equation? When phi is equal to constant. And let's take C as also to be either slowly varying or nearly constant. So, delta, let me write it because we will use it after break, this thing. Let me write you solution of this equation at eta or t larger than t recombination. So for eta, I will use Kapler quantum since now, yeah. So what is delta gamma k eta recombination? How it would be written? K eta, okay, let's write this. So particular solution, who could tell me particular solution?
Delta gamma is minus.
Correct. So, assume that this is constant, time-independent constant, compare these two terms, and then for small CS or constant CS, you will see this particular solution. So, A is equal minus 4 over 3 CS squared, phi, and eta larger than eta equality, of course. This is the frozen gravitational potential, but it still has to be expressed in terms of the original spectra for the perturbation with the given wavelength, wave number k. plus general solution of this equation. How to find general solution of this equation? First, you remove these two, just changing variables. Then you get second order differential equation, which you could solve in WKB approximation. Yeah, for slowly varying speed of sound. And let me skip this trivial step and let me write generic solutions. So, plus, what will appear? Some t zero, which depends on k, coefficient, numerical coefficient, square root of cs, where cs is slowly changing speed of sound, cosine k integral cs d eta, yeah, from zero to eta, and then exponent minus k divided by kd, I will explain at the moment the appearance of this exponent. So this part is clear. Why? It's sound wave which is propagating with the speed of sound. So what describes this solution? This solution describes the evolution of the sound wave under the influence of gravitational potential which comes from the cold particles. You see? And of course, this solution also is valid on the scale larger than the horizon scale. You could just consider very small k, replace cosine, and then you will get the result about which I told you before also. But you know that on the horizon scale, here everything will be trivial. It will be just constant, minus 4 over 3, something like this one, of gravitational potential. But on the scale smaller than the horizon, there appears no trivial evolution, so perturbations start to oscillate. And in fact, actually, at the moment when they start to oscillate, why they start to oscillate at this time? Because the period of oscillation becomes shorter than the cosmological time. When cosmological times were very small, period of oscillation of this sound wave was very large, okay, it looked like it's dead, yeah, because on short time, wave doesn't change. As you know, you could think about any wave on very short time, yeah, like it's in slow roll regime. But okay, I'm kidding. Now, what is this? From where this factor appears? This is so-called sealed damping factor, and it comes precisely from this term, with the shear viscosity. You see? And if there would be no shear viscosity, there would be no this exponential decay of perturbation depending on the wave number. From where this thing comes? As I told you, from this drunk stellar travel of the photon. So, this thing is called silk damping. Silk damping. And it comes from the following thing. As I told you already, photon moves, okay, like this. And like transceller, yeah. And on the scales over which photon moves, it mixes everything and smears away all inhomogeneities which were there. You see? So it mixes everything. How to make estimate for this scale of smearing without precise solution, physical estimate? What is this? So, lambda, physical wavelengths on which they think is the cosmological moment of time, dt will be smeared, is equal to the square root of the number of steps of the drunk photon, yeah, because it's like diffusion thing, multiplied by the free mean path for the photon, right? What is this n? It's cosmological time divided by lambda, or size of the horizon divided by lambda, gamma, yeah? So, and from here you will get the formula, the silk scale at the moment. Cosmological time t is equal ct multiplied by lambda, gamma square root. So this is the mean free path of the photon, and of course you understand that this number is much smaller than the horizon scale. But on the scale which are smaller than this scale, all perturbations will be smeared, so they will just be washed out. This is the reason, by the way, why this spectra usually goes very fast down here, exponentially fast here. So since that in scale correspond on this curve, which you have seen many times, perhaps, or some of you, okay, to some scale, which is about here. So now, what is last thing, and then we make break. What is this thing, this coefficient? Of course, we have to express this coefficient, as I told, if we want to achieve our final goal, we have to express this coefficient in terms of the original amplitude of the original perturbation spectrum. And I will give you result. Let's begin with this coefficient here in front of this gravitational potential. So here you could write that phi k at eta larger than eta equality is equal tp, which depends on k, so called transfer function for potential part, multiplied by phi initial spectra of in the mode k. So this is what after inflation. And now this function, okay, should be calculated somehow. For the perturbation, which have the scale larger than the horizon scale at the moment of equality, what is this function? 9/10 or 1, whatever you want, because nothing happens there. For the perturbation which entered horizon, that's perturbation which entered horizon much before equality. You see, when dust entered horizon, or perturbation entered horizon much before equality, universe was dominated by radiation. So gravitational potential was due to radiation. Radiation was sound wave at this moment of time, and this sound wave was decaying. And was also smearing the amplitude of gravitational potential, putting down, and putting down the amplitude of inhomogeneities in the cold matter. Therefore, here, the crucial role plays the role, the moment of equality. So I write here on this axis k at equality, and k at equality equal 1 corresponds to the perturbation which entered horizon scale at the moment of equality. Perturbation is smaller wavelengths, or with smaller k, larger wavelengths, stay outside horizon, yeah, and entered horizon only after equality, therefore nothing happened with them. This thing, of course, is analytical. Perturbation which entered horizon when radiation was dominating, okay, have smaller and smaller and smaller amplitude compared to the original amplitude because it was suppressed by these decaying sound waves. This function can be calculated only on computer. And I think this Bond, I forgot, Sally paper is quoted mostly because of this trivial thing, because people use the fitting formula, yeah, here. But it's not so rare. Now, this is the gravitational part of the delta gamma. Now, what about amplitude of sound wave? How to express this amplitude of sound wave in terms of the original potential, because it's amplitude of sound wave, generated sound wave. You see, here things could be calculated also as a function of k at equality, I will write. Here the thing also can be calculated analytically in two regimes. For the perturbation, which entered horizon much before equality, and perturbation which entered horizon much later equality. Yeah? Here, for the perturbation which entered horizon much before, long before equality, this amplitude or this function, where it is? No, TO, and here I have to multiply also by phi initial k, yeah, sorry. So I will write it like this one. Yeah? So this function is just constant and is equal 0.4. For the perturbation which entered horizon much later than equality, this after equality, small k after equality is 0.4. But large k, smaller wavelength, so they came before, yeah? For the perturbation which entered horizon before equality, when radiation still was dominating, this coefficient is equal 1.96, 97. So in some region, this coefficient should change by factor 5. In which region? Okay, analytically, you can never say this thing. And of course, it was the biggest headache in this CMB slow. Because what I discovered surprising things that this range, okay, in which this coefficient changes by factor 5 is extremely large. It corresponds to the scale of the wavelengths of the order of 10. So k eta between 1 and 10. And function goes like this one. So in logarithmic scale here, it's nearly linear function. Therefore, there could be good fitted formula. You see? And the most, it's called bloody thing, I mean, in a sense, which costed me most of the blood, yeah, is the fact that first three Doppler peak are due to the wavelengths precisely here in this region, which is not calculable analytically. And this is the reason why Weinberg, which calculated this function only here, lost completely dependence of this height of the Doppler peak on the density of cold matter in the universe. Because density of cold matter of the universe, I mean the dependence, come from this kind of thing. Because you understand that at the equality depends on omega matter in the universe. That equality is proportional to omega m h squared, normalized Hubble constant, yeah, in power minus 1/2. Smaller omega m, larger, or once vice versa, I forgot already, doesn't it? No, it's okay. That equality is inversely proportional 1 over square root of omega. You see? And here is logarithmic scale. So you expect from here also, from this dependence, that this dependence, okay, of omega t0 k should involve logarithm of omega m h squared. You see? And as you will see, it's a place where dependence of the amplitude of the spectrum comes from m. Now, how to understand this difference in amplitudes? Perturbation which comes inside horizon before equality, they are boosted by the gravitational potential of the sound, or how it's called, the amplitude of this sound wave is boosted by gravitational potential if perturbation enters horizon before equality. And this brings us factor 5. But now let's make break, because I believe that if it's not, it's time even. After the time. So, okay, we meet in 15 minutes. It's okay?